Are you ready to ignite your information security career? Well, then buckle up, put on your tinfoil hat, and get ready for Hackers on Fire with your host, Glenn Roberts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hackers on Fire. I'm thrilled to introduce our guest today, Susan Nascimento. Hey, what's up, Susan?
Everything's great, Glenn.
Everything's great. Awesome. Well, everyone, Susan is the Global Application Security Manager for Experian. She's been there several years. She's got a Master of Science degree from Pepperdine University, CISSP certified, CRISC, and working on CSSLP. Wow. Well, Susan, I've shared a little bit about you. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. So I've been pretty much passionate about information security since 2000. My skill set's pretty much in application security, awareness training, policy management, and risk management. And as you said, I'm currently a global application security manager at Experian. And there, I'm responsible for developing like a comprehensive strategy, implementing insightful, actionable metrics, and engaging 5,000 software development staff so that they can come to understand, commit, and maybe even love or advocate for application security.
Yes. I imagine it's probably a challenge to turn a developer into a security engineer, but you know, I'm sure that there's an in-between that you can strike.
Yes, and I love those kind of challenges, actually. So I love taking somebody who knows nothing about it and they're angry when you tell them that they have some security flaws in their code, and helping them to have that aha moment is great.
Yeah, I remember in my past being able to take a code scanner and then allow them to run the scanner against their own code so that they can, you know, before they turn it into QA for testing, they feel assured that, you know, at least there's not going to be a security vulnerability that's found.
Yeah.
They just got really excited about that. And that's where some interest started to develop. Have you had similar circumstances?
Yeah, absolutely. So before, you know, anytime you just do a manual pen test and it's after the fact that they've done a lot of development, and then you tell them after the fact that they have all of these flaws, you can sense that there's a sense of frustration in them. It's going to take a lot of work to fix it. As opposed to having like code scanners where they get to do it iteratively, you know, on unit-based code, and you put it into like a self-service model where they can run it and fix it on their own and learn from it, that seems to be much more well-received. So that by the time they get to a manual pen test when it's in, you know, ready for production, it's in a much better risk posture, and they're much more open to what you're about to say to them at that point too.
Yeah, definitely. I can't wait to dive into some of these details, but before we do, I wanted to ask you, do you have a motivational quote?
I do. And so I have a digital vision board that rotates a lot of my quotes and guidance. I put my values and my life dreams on it. And right now I'm really drawn to two. So one that I really like is from Jillian Michaels, which is the trainer on The Biggest Loser. So some people might be laughing, but that's who I really like right now. But she says, she always says, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I really like it because I used to be very uncomfortable just even networking or presenting. But I learned that stress actually is our body's way of making us stronger, and that there's power in being vulnerable. So I tend to lean into my discomfort knowing that it'll pass and I'll be stronger for it. And I still get kind of mildly uncomfortable with networking or presenting, but nowhere near what it was a few years ago. And I know that getting uncomfortable means I'm growing.
That's right. And you know, you're a great speaker. From The Biggest Loser and everything, you know, no pain, no gain.
Yes.
So yeah, just like you said, you're growing with that discomfort.
Right. Absolutely.
That's such a great quote for us. You know, moving back to you and your career and what you're doing, the great work that you're doing out in the field, can you tell us how you started to kind of get into information security? You've been doing it for a while. But, you know, how did you start to get the idea that you might be interested in this, and how did you break into security?
I think it was like, it seems like what a lot of people, it's just kind of, I was just in the right place at the right time. For about 4 years, I worked in computer-aided design. So that's how I kind of got started in technology. And I did that for large oil and engineering firms. Then I spent another 4 years as a business analyst during that kind of dot-com growth period. And around, I would say about early 2000, I accepted a job at like a medium-sized consulting firm as a consulting business analyst. I worked on projects like software development, websites, e-com, and they also had this small security niche group. So then the dot-com bubble collapsed and we had 9/11 and they lost a ton of consulting revenue rapidly. Like nobody wanted to do websites and software development anymore. And so they had dozens of layoffs and they went from a company of 250 to 20. And their new business strategy was to refocus all their efforts on security services. So the executive team that was left, they handpicked three women to join a team of three expert InfoSec men to help build up their service. And now when I say that, three women, three men, it kind of sounds like the Brady Bunch. And I was one of the lucky women. And that's when InfoSec was kind of born inside of me. So the guys would teach us every day about pen testing. They set up a private lab so we could hack and learn on it. We also learned about security policies and then how to translate that into awareness training. And then I got to work side by side with them and kind of, you know, like a mentor protege type of relationship, working on several projects related to that. And I really found that even though about a year, all six of us either left or were let go because we didn't get enough sales going. And I kind of looked back and I thought, okay, you know what? The trend is to outsource IT. That's where everything was going. But I noticed companies weren't outsourcing security. So initially I chose to stay in InfoSec just for job security reasons. But as I got more experience, I found myself really drawn to it because it had to me, it had so many more flavors, and I felt like I had a higher purpose of securing information. So that's when I finally made the decision, I'm going to go get my CISB. And as soon as I did that, that's when everything started. That was like the turning point for me where everything started to change dramatically.
Yeah, there's something about getting the certification, even though you're totally qualified for it anyways, but getting the certification kind of, I don't know, it just feels rewarding in a way.
Yes. It does. I remember when I took my test, I studied for 6 months. I went to I think it was a Sheraton in downtown LA, totally prepared for, you know, that 6-hour test. And in next door, there was an air wall and there was a motivational speaker conference going on. And they were playing Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle with a marching band as I was taking the test.
Nice.
Yeah. So I thought, you know what, if I pass that with under those conditions, I feel pretty good.
Yeah. And you did. So Susan, one of the things that I've noticed is that there appears to be a lot more men in information security than women. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the great things about having you on. You know, do you think that that's a problem or is that just normal? What's the situation with that?
You know, honestly, I don't really know. So I just have to go off of my gut instinct. I'd love to see more women in this industry. And I think it may be one because, you know, women are nice and it's hard to be nice in this kind of, just in any kind of career. So you have to learn to be assertive and not smile a lot when you're talking or use inflections, but then you really don't get to be yourself. And I think that it's okay for women to be passionate and emotional. And I think that a lot of times we think that technical skills are only important, but soft skills and learning how to build trust with somebody and make a relationship, because that's how you really get somebody to change their mind to do something, is through those kinds of qualities. So I think that women have a lot of those strengths that they can bring to this kind of role. And I think that there's a lot of different resources that are coming out. I know like the Executive Women's Forum is a really awesome place for advice and connections that once I got connected with them, I was so used to being around. Women tend to get very competitive with each other in business. And at that forum, it's like a conference. I didn't see any of that. And it really opened my eyes that we're there to help each other. So they have like a phenomenal annual conference. They have like a leadership journey program. They also have a great mentorship program. So that's, I think, where people can kind of get in and learn how to work their way up in this industry is through that resource. But I would love to see more women in this industry, and I'm always open to mentoring other people that want to get in as well.
Oh, that's fantastic. Caroline Wong just recently recommended the Executive Women's Forum, and so I know it must be a really great organization. So if there's any women out there that's interested in security or in security and interested in networking, I guess you would say that that's a great organization to be a part of.
Absolutely. I mean, if I only had one conference that I could go to, I honestly, that would be the one I would go to. Just I feel like I get technical and soft skills at the same time, and I build up so many great relationships there.
Yeah. And my mission is to get more people into information security and help fill the demand and the need for information security professionals. And, you know, since there is this sort of more men than women in information security, I feel like it's a good strategy to tap that talent, the women that are out there. And I think there's a whole lot more that we can do to fill jobs with women that are in information security.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing is, Ben Wright mentioned on the first podcast that he feels that just from a diversity perspective, it's very important to make sure that we have the advice and perspectives from, you know, both a male and female perspective, that humans, you know, have both, whether you're male or female.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, whether you're male or female, and also, you know, what age group you come from, because, you know, even how you try to think about how you're trying to secure the millennials versus, you know, baby boomers, it's just different how they react. But you want to make sure you're talking to all the audience. So let's say if you're at Avon, you'd want to make sure that you have at least half of your executives are women, because that's who your target demographic is, right? So you want to make sure you're getting the same, their perspective from everybody else.
Yeah, that's a good point. Doesn't matter if it's man, woman, guy, girl, you know, it's a colleague and someone that can really do a great job. If you were to help them or receive help from them, maybe you can do a good job. Would you say that your turning point was when you got your CISSP? Was that your turning point in your career?
Yeah, I would say that was my first turning point.
You know, what's interesting about that is that you got your CISSP and it was a turning point for you, but it's just a piece of paper. But you had the skills, but somehow, you know, being given the permission almost to develop that confidence, you know, was part of getting that CISSP, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, it is just a piece of paper. But, you know, it's like you have bragging rights, and it's such a hard test, and it's nice that it's hard, because once you get it, you feel honored to have it. It did make me well-rounded. Like, I didn't know anything about cryptography. So I was able, or business continuity or physical security. So to be able to at least get some kind of broadness around it helped just round me out. And at least then I would know, not that I became an expert in it by any means, but I knew exactly where to go to get more resources if I needed to. And I think, yeah, just it bolsters your confidence. And the fact that you see a lot of, it seems like half of the security jobs ask for that as the minimum. You know, once you have that, you feel like it's the gold standard. And then you go on from there.
That's right. And you've gone on from there. You've done a great many things, probably things that you're even more proud of, you know, kind of in the application security space. Tell me about some of those.
Well, let's see. In the application security space, I am really enjoying around what I'm doing right now, because I'm working on kind of a new version, a new evolution of our application security policy and strategy. So we update it every year or so. And I'm currently co-leading an Application Security Leadership Council. And this has been a really great way to get outside security stakeholders to come in. So we brought in like 20 different business leaders that cover all of the business units, corporate areas like audit, PMO, HR, and bringing them together. And a lot of them, I think some of them, like HR, was like, I'm not sure, you know, how I fit into this. But they have their own aha moments. So it's been a great way to gain awareness, commitment, and get them to advocate for some of the policy decisions. Having people decide on how many days, how long to fix, or what definitions mean. And you would find that, you know, I might have what my definition of success is, but their definition might be different. And then us actually talking it through and having a really long conversation on one word, like what does remediation really mean? What does mitigation really mean? And going through that, and then all of us being very clear, and then we all speak the same language, that creates a lot of power, and it allows you to have a lot more robust discussions.
Right. And I love how security is so much more than just securing all the things. I mean, what you're doing is operating as kind of like the glue of the organization, bringing people together, getting them opportunities to talk and develop that common language, as you mentioned, which is so vital for developing a community culture at an institution. So that's all good stuff. And raising the maturity of that organization to where they're prepared for disasters and understand and can quantify different risks, that's priceless.
It is. And, it's definitely, before I used to kind of do, I think, what they call a command and control leadership model, where I would just be like, this is the policy and this is the way we're going to do it. And then, nothing would take hold. So even though kind of bringing everybody together, giving everybody a say in it, giving them awareness, it takes a lot of time, but now I see it sticking. And so it's definitely much more of, sustainable leadership model to follow of bringing them in and you being in the center or kind of leading them from the front and not pushing them that way.
Indeed. Let's talk about yourself and, more along the lines of as you're working towards the level that you're at right now. I know that you've gotten a lot of guidance along the way. What are some of the pieces of guidance that really stick with you even now?
Executives only care about four things. They care about making money, saving money, deferring costs, and staying out of jail. So anytime I talk, I try to weave my story to cover one of these things. So when I'm talking to someone, I try not to talk about it's about being more secure. It's to answer the question to it. So it might be about that you're going to save money. And so this is a kind of an insurance policy of what you're doing. Other things that I've learned and kind of guidance is fail often or fail early. I don't like the word fail, so I try to reframe that, but I'll say I'll learn through experiment. So when I was working on metrics, everybody wanted them to be perfect, including me. But you'll never know what people are going to act on until you show it. So you got to be willing to be vulnerable and put the information out there and get feedback on it. So my metrics got significantly better because I allowed myself to kind of show the draft and proposals and go through the experiments. And the other thing I would say is I heard once in one of the classes I took that people only remember 5% of what you say, 25% of what they say, and 75% of what they feel. So the best way to affect change is through the heart, using stories or analogies. So when I'm talking to someone again, I'm trying to weave the story and I'm trying to pull at the heartstrings in order to get them to understand my point of view. And then I've got to also understand their point of view too, so they know that I'm on their side just as much. And then if they can repeat back what they're saying, that way they can remember it. So I have that a lot in when I'm doing my learning through training and awareness. It's not just a one-way presentation. I have to get people to be part of a community, to collaborate, and to feel it in order to affect change. Right now, I'm rolling out the new policy at our company. And, you say the word policy, and honestly, I think people are starting to yawn and they get out the drool cup and nobody wants to come to a webinar. So I've got to find really innovative, creative ways to get people to listen. And I do it in just a totally different way that I think sometimes it almost passes the line of people think I might going to be unprofessional, but I'm really trying to get to be viral and have an honest conversation about it.
Well, I love that because people want to have fun. People want to feel connected. You're specifically focusing on that and ensuring people are comfortable. And, you're making that connection with them, making sure they walk out learning something. So I love that engagement. You got some good advice there on speaking, business speak, in terms of dollars and things of that nature, having that translation layer so that you can actually make a connection with the business. Failing often, sometimes failure's got a bad connotation to it, but mm-hmm. In reality, look at Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, all the greats, they weren't afraid to fail and they knew it was just part of the process.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what's motivating you right now?
Well, I'm really enjoying doing the application security policy and strategy. That's taking up a lot of my time and doing the creativity and marketing of it to make it fun. But on a personal note, I've recently started an accountability tribe of people like me or that I aspire to be like. And I kind of equate this with like a board of directors. And we meet once a month. They give me honest feedback and hold me accountable to my plans. And in return, I give them the same value. And I'm also doing some leadership and management consulting for a medium-sized nonprofit right now. So that kind of gives me a lot of time to feel like I'm serving with purpose. And I'd also like to branch out and start doing some information security consulting on the side as well, too, as pro bono.
Oh, that's fantastic. I hope that at the end, or maybe we could just do it now. Can you give us a way to connect with you if somebody's listening and it really struck a chord and they want to reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. The two best ways to get a hold of me is LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn a lot. I think it's a great resource for professionals to get connected. It's become the new way of Monster. And that's how a lot of companies find people. So I think that's a great place to put your branding on there. So you can always reach me there. And then I also have my own website. So it's SusanNascimento.com.
Excellent. Thank you for doing that. While we're on the subject of different websites and such, are there any other websites that are out there or tools that you would recommend?
I would say, the ones that I'm on the most, I'm on Dark Reading a lot, and I'm on the CSO online site, the AppSec specifically, just constantly getting feeds there. But I'd say from just application security perspective, if people wanted to get more familiar, I would say like the BSIM, Building Security and Maturity Model, or the OpenSAM, Software Assurance Maturity Model, I believe it is. Those are just good standards to learn about how to build a good AppSec program. DMAIC is another tool I've used. It's a Six Sigma tool. Getting Six Sigma certified is a whole undertaking in itself. But there's this one tool I learned that was a great way to identify root cause of problems. So like I use this sometimes for identifying some security solutions. So,
yeah, I agree. I've used that for several years, and I've even used an R on the end of it for the reporting so that then you can report back in centrally and then others can leverage the work that you've done, including, taking a look at how you presented something. So for those who are listening, you want to improve some sort of process. Maybe it's a security process or a vulnerability management solution. What you can do is define what you're trying to do, measure, analyze, implement, I guess, and then control and, of course, report on the whole thing. So really a great recommendation. Thank you, Susan.
And Glenn, thank you. I didn't know about the R. So I'm going to, as soon as we're done here, I'm going to be looking that up on Google.
Well, you can, but I don't think it's part of the formal Six Sigma. But it's something that we did at Dell, and, it stuck with me.
Sweet.
All right. And, we've given everybody so many different nuggets of wisdom in this particular podcast, and maybe we could boil it down for someone who's getting into information security or they're already in, but they're kind of junior level. If we had to boil all those and condense all those recommendations down, what kind of advice would you give someone to help them advance their career?
I would say first, honestly, is to learn as much as you can about yourself. And I say this because this is what I would do. If I could go back in time, this is what I would do. I would take assessments to learn about myself. Take the Myers-Briggs. There's also one that most people take that. There's also one called the Enneagram, which is really inexpensive. Take the StrengthFinders 2.0 assessment. Learn where your strengths are. Because if you learn where your strengths are and you work in them, you're just going to be naturally engaged. So like my top strength is learning. So if I couldn't work in a job that didn't allow me the autonomy to learn, then I wouldn't be productive and a happy employee.
Yeah.
Next, I'd say start learning about the field that you want to be in. So if you want to be in InfoSec, discover as much data as you can to get as clear of a vision as possible. So I would start following people in the field on Twitter. I'd read professional blogs. I noticed which authors and resources they were recommending. I'd interview people because few people will turn down a cup of coffee at Starbucks just to talk to them for 15 to 20 minutes. I'd talk to people who are in this field at companies you like at professional associations. And, you know, ultimately you want to learn like what security domains you like and don't like. Because, you know, there's physical sec, there's BCP, there's AppSec, there's all sorts of stuff. So you'll kind of figure out which ones bore you to tears and which ones are pulling you towards them. And then ultimately just start trying things. So ask someone that you've interacted with in those in this discovery phase if you could maybe job shadow them for just a day or volunteer, you know, at the ISSA or even at a SANS course. I believe you can volunteer and you can get a super discounted rate to going to SANS that way. So I would say learn about yourself, learn about the field, and just go out and try and experiment. Remember, it's not failing. It's just experimenting.
Those are awesome. Thank you for that condensing that you've done. I recall one time I was trying to figure out which centralized logging solution I should go with. We were actually struggling a little bit with a vendor selection on it. We narrowed it down to one solution, and then someone said, hey, Starbucks was using it and they don't like it or something similar. It was just rumors. And so we needed to find out information about it. And I didn't know anyone over at Starbucks. So I looked on LinkedIn, I found the CIO and I just, sent him a little note and, you know, ended up getting invited over there to meet with their staff and discuss and ask as many questions as I wanted. They were just a really huge help. And a lot of times we think that security people won't open up and tell you certain things or every single thing has to be top secret, but yes. That just simply isn't true. And so you just have to ask sometimes. Susan, thank you so much for coming on the show. And everyone, you can find all of the show notes online for this. Just go to hackersonfire.com and search for Susan Nascimento. Thanks again. I really appreciate all of your insights.
Great. Thank you so much. And this is awesome that you have this great and wonderful mission and that you're actually living your purpose. That's very cool.
I'm trying. Hey, everybody. It's Glenn. I'm excited to share a free gift with you. Hacker 500 is a resource guide of 500 of the world's best information security tools. So check it out. It's a free download on hackersonfire.com. We'll see you there.
Thank you so much for checking out Hackers on Fire with your host, Glenn Roberts. We'll see you next time.